Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
Unless we have a strong institution and we make sure that Chadian people can choose the leaders who are going to handle their development problems and security problems. Unless we do that, there is nothing sustainable. So one of our first focus was to make sure that we create and we lay the foundations for a strong institution.
Chadian Prime Minister commits to strengthening the country's institutions as a priority for his new administration.
Government has made some proactive attempts to address some of our concerns. For instance, the wage award that was not paid was paid up to December and January.
Nigeria's Trade Union Congress, or TUC, suspends its ultimatum to government over a memorandum of understanding agreement.
Our investigations as a party also pointed out that there were matters of concern that had been attributed to our leader of opposition. And when the party had a meeting of the highest conclave of leaders, he agreed to the challenges and the party advised him strongly to step down.
And Uganda's opposition National Unity Platform, or NUP, demands the resignation of a leading member of the party over allegations of corruption. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Chad's Prime Minister Success Masra says he is committed to strengthening the country's institutions as a priority for his new administration. A former opposition leader, Masra was appointed to his role at the beginning of the year after his return from exile in the U.S. Chad authorities said opposition politician Yaya Dillo was killed during an exchange of fire with security forces after what the government said was an opposition attack on security facilities. Prime Minister Masra says the incident should be seen as an opportunity for Chadians to work toward unity. Masra tells viewers Jackson Mvungani that as the country prepares for elections and a transition to civilian rule, his main task is to reform the economy and electoral institutions for a free and fair election.
Mr. Prime Minister, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for the invitation.
So let's talk a little bit about the situation in Chad. How would you describe the current political situation in the country?
We started the flight, which is a transitional period. We decided to gather all the bodies, all the energies. We have a pilot, a co-pilot, and we want to have a soft landing. But we go through, you know, some zones of turbulence. But this is normal for, you know, when you take a flight, this is something that happens. We had one in 2022, Black Thursday. We had, one also during the last days. And I want to pay tribute to all those who lose their lives, because no matter where they come from, they are Chadians, and their blood is Chadian's blood. And I had head of the government, this is really something which is not good for no one. Mm. But this is also where we should rethink and find in this difficult situation a stone of hope, and make sure that through the reconciliation and through unity, we make sure that we have a soft landing to make sure that, you know, by end of the year, Chadian people can choose their leaders, presidential leader at presidential level, but also at MPs later and then local level.
You took over as Prime Minister in January of this year,
Yes. Just
kind of really fresh into the job. Can you highlight some of the key priorities for your administration in terms of governance and policy initiatives?
First of all, institutions, because unless we have a strong institution and we make sure that Chadian people can choose the leaders, they can decide to choose their servant leaders who are going to handle their development problems and security problems. Unless we do that, there is nothing sustainable. So one of our first focus was to make sure that we create and we lay the foundations for strong institutions. This is number one. Number two, when we took office, actually children were at home. There was a strike and children were not going to school. So the first thing we did was to make sure that we will bring back children at school. And this gives me the opportunity to say that the top of the top priority of my government is the question of education, right? If Africa need to be changed, if we want to transform Africa, to transform Chad, to transform Sahel, we have to bet on education.
Right.
So education became number one priority of my government, you know? And I'm happy to see that I went to the African Union to represent the president and to talk about Chadian's position. And we are happy to know that the theme of the African Union this year is about education.
Right. Mr. Prime Minister, finally, given the regional challenges, particularly in the Sahel region, how is Chad contributing to the regional security and stability?
I think there is no other here. Our country, Chad, is the geographic center of Africa is in Chad, in the southern part of Chad. The oldest man discovery in the world is in Chad, Tumai. So what we offer to the world is our humanity, despite the fact that we have development challenges. And this is the role that Chad is playing. This is the role that we intend to play in the Sahel region and above. I was mentioning the fact that despite the very difficult situation in Sudan, we kept our borders open to make sure that we can welcome our brothers and sisters who are flying, you know, who are leaving their countries, going away because they are seeking home. So we offer them home. More than 1.5 million refugees. 60% of the refugees of the Sahel are there in Chad, which shows, I think, our humanity. People over everything. But now, because we stood up with dignity, we need also a support of our friends, friends of Chad, friends of the Chadian people, etc. This is on the humanitarian side. But we intend also to continue to play our role on security side, you know, to continue to transform our army, our security forces. And this is for us a public investment that we are bringing on the table. Last but not least, we need to make sure that we move our country from a one-legged kind of country to a two-legged country, where basically the question of security, we focus on that 100%, but also the question of development.
Success Masra is the Prime Minister of Chad. He spoke with my colleague Jackson Vunganyu from here in Washington. In Nigeria, the Trade Union Congress, or TUC, has suspended its ultimatum to government over a signed memorandum of understanding. This after leaders of the workers' group said the administration resolved nearly half of its demands in the agreement. The TUC had issued a two-week notice to the government to address a series of demands, including measures to cushion the effects of the prevailing economic conditions facing the country. Nuhu Toro is the General Secretary of the Trade Union Congress. He tells me that the decision to suspend the ultimatum would also allow the government room to keep its commitment to resolve the rest of the workers' demands.
We took a decision, and the decision was in tandem with the ultimatum we gave government ab initio from day one. Recall, we issued a 14-day ultimatum urging government to address all our concerns as stipulated in the memorandum of understanding we signed with them. Of course, government has made some proactive attempts to address some of our concerns. For instance, the wage award that was not paid was paid up to December and January. The visitation of the refineries, which we agreed that did not take place, took place, and our colleagues from the Trade Union Congress of Nigeria went. Now, the government is also looking at modalities to stabilize the currency, because we believe strongly that part of the reason why we've gotten to where we are as a country is the inability of the government to stabilize the value of the naira vis-a-vis or in relation to the dollar. So the government are working on that. So we felt in our wisdom, at the end of the day, we did a checklist to go through the items on our memorandum of understanding So we, in going through that checklist, we explained 12 items, and the government did accomplish 5.5, which we prorated to 6. So we gave them 50% of the entire stuff, which suggests they still have to do more.
What do you say to critics who are of the view that you gave in too easily when only half of your demands have been met, especially when you threatened a strike or decision to embark on a strike and issued an ultimatum? How do you respond to that?
Well, people have a right to their opinion, but he who wears the shoes feels the pinch. Don't forget, we were the ones that issued the ultimatum. We were the ones that also signed the MOU. So if our sincere assessment of government's compliance is 50%, I'm not sure it should be disputable.
What do you say to those who are of the view that one of the key reasons why they support the TUCs in these negotiations with the government is as a result of the prevailing economic conditions, which they said is very difficult, and they want what they call palliatives of any measures to ease some of the economic challenges, stress that they face now? Your response to that?
Well, the truth is, things are hard in Nigeria, no doubt. There is high cost of goods and services in the market, no doubt. The naira has devaluated significantly. So, from this standpoint, you will understand that both members of the Trade Union Congress of Nigeria and the general public go to the same market. And what we are trying to do in our wisdom is to get government working to ensure that these issues are dealt with immediately. Otherwise, the 30,000 naira minimum wage that is paid preceding this time is already eroded, which suggests that with 30,000, you can even barely go to work in a month. What happens to transportation? What happens to housing? What happens to food on the table of a family of a husband, his wife, and 4 children? So automatically that is gone. And again, one other item that is that concerns basically the working people that I forgot to mention is the minimum wage review. As I speak to you today, the committee has been constituted. Work has commenced. In fact, very soon we'll be going on visitation to all the states to get their concerns on what should be paid based on regions.
So this is to allow the government to still negotiate with you to resolve all the rest of the concerns, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But they have also given us assurances that they are working to ensure that that is dispensed with. We are hopeful. We are hopeful without necessarily plunging the nation into chaos. We are hopeful. But again, there's a limit to what we can take. If this continues unabated, then you should be rest assured that we will take a decisive decision that in the long run will seek to defend the working people and their families.
Nuhu Toro is the General Secretary of the TUC. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In Senegal, a coalition of civil society groups says it sharply disagrees with President Macky Sall's June 2nd date for the coming presidential election. Over 200 NGO and civil society members make up the umbrella group Arsunu Election, which translates in English as Let's Preserve Our Elections. They say the president will lack legitimacy after his second and final term expires on April 2nd, as enshrined in the constitution. This after the president said a national dialogue proposed the June 2 election. Saul, however, says he will step down on April 2nd when his official term expires. But political observers say the newly proposed date contradicts a recent Constitutional Council ruling, which called on the president to organize the vote as soon as possible before his term expires. They also say if not quickly resolved, the country could be plunged into a constitutional crisis. Senegal was originally scheduled to hold presidential elections on February 25th. For the latest update and analysis, I reach Saidi Gassama. He is a prominent member of the group Let's Preserve Our Elections and also the head of the Senegalese Human Rights Coalition.
Indeed, we see civil society organizations in Senegal are totally disagree with the decision of President Macky Sall, because the Constitutional Court, in their last ruling, has asked the president to organize election as soon as possible. That means before the end of his term, which is 2nd of April. In this country, it is clearly stated in the Constitution that first round elections should be the last Sunday of April or February, and the handover should be the 2nd of April. So the 2nd of April will be the end of his term. He cannot organize election beyond that date. That's what we stick on in the as civil society organizations and the political parties who have empowered to seize again the Constitutional Court have seized it to ask them this time to set clearly when to give a date where the election should be organized. So we are waiting the Constitutional Court to decide over the date of the elections.
So, Saidi, do you see civil society groups like yours and other opponents of the administration or critics going to court?
Political parties, candidates who were validated by the Constitutional Court have already seized the court to ask them to fix a new date, which means they are challenging the 2nd of June proposal from the president. So the court has maximum 2 weeks to decide. So we are now waiting the court to decide on the new date. We don't expect the court to decide otherwise, because they are the guardian of the constitution of this country, and they should definitely act to preserve the constitution if they don't want the country to go in trouble.
What are you hearing from Senegalese about President Macky Sall's date? Because some people are saying that if this happens, then there could be a constitutional crisis, because then President Macky Sall would have extended his term from the April 2nd that the constitution allows. Is this the case?
Absolutely. What people are saying is that beyond after the 2nd of April, he should no longer be our president. He should no longer be our president. Even if the Constitutional Court agrees that he should stay in power, he will have a legality, but he will not have a legitimacy to continue to run the country. And what a president needs to run a people is to have legitimacy. If you don't have that, even with the decision of the court, you can no longer be seen by people as a president, as a legitimate president. So we'll have a crisis of legitimacy after the 2nd of April, if he stay in power. He will not be recognized by the opposition parties, by the large part of the Senegalese population, and I also believe by the international community.
Some supporters of the president are saying he has all the information that informed him to make the decision of having the election on June 2nd. So why wouldn't people accommodate him to ensure a smooth process for the next president?
What he really wanted is to change his candidate to the election. He has chosen a candidate that he don't believe that he will win the elections, so he wanted to change the candidate. And now he is invoking the Ramadan. He say that from 10th of March we will have Ramadan. Nobody will be able to campaign during the Ramadan. We are in the Christians, let's say, fasting. And we were supposed to organize the election during the Christian fasting period. We have a minority of 10% of Christians in this country. We should respect them. Why should we campaign during the Christian holy month? And we say you can't do that during the Muslim holy month. You're also talking about one or two Muslim feasts that will happen during that time to postpone the election to 2nd of June. So you see, there is no any serious legal reasons to postpone the election to 2nd June.
But do you think there's even enough time, based on what we are seeing now, for the Electoral Commission to organize free, fair, transparent, credible election when there's not necessarily enough time for the Electoral Commission to prepare?
No. They are definitely ready. I can say you, I get that information from first-hand electoral officials that all the material are in place. All the bulletin have been printed, and I have seen the bulletin of any one of the candidates. Everything is printed. All the material is filled. They are ready for 90%, according to the official sources. The top electoral officer told me that they are ready for 90%. And you show me the bulletins and give me proof that they are ready to organize the elections.
Saidi Gassama is a prominent member of the group Let's Preserve Our Elections and also the head of the Senegalese Human Rights Coalition. He spoke with me from the capital, Dakar. In Zambia, the executive director of the Center for Policy Dialogue is expressing concern that former President Edgar Lungu's recent statement against the government could create instability. The center is nonpartisan, dedicated to formulating public policies based on social justice, limited government, individual freedom, and rule of law. Caroline Katutobwe warns that Lungu's statements are divisive, destabilizing, and could worsen tensions and create anarchy. Her remarks come after the former president suggested Zambians would arise and force President Hakainde Hichilema to hand over power before the next general election due to what he says are economic challenges and unkept promises. The former president has come under criticism for the remarks. For more reaction, I reach Caroline Katutobwe. She is the executive director of the Center for Policy Dialogue.
This particular statement, which was uttered by the former president, Mr. Edgar Chagwa Lungu, unfortunately has undertones that can bring about anarchy in our country. And it's quite divisive. And with the authority that comes from him being a former president, it's like sparking a fire and waiting to see what happens thereafter. And that for us has not sat very well as the center, because of course Zambia, and like every other country within our region, southern region, is going through a challenging time. These are not the best times, and more especially, you know, these are times where we need to be united as a country. But the divisive nature of that statement leaves a bitter taste in most of our mouths, to be honest.
Caroline, what do you say to his supporters who are of the view that he was free to warn the country because he has experienced leadership in Zambia and that his concerns are guaranteed as free speech, which the Constitution protects? So coming out to attack him invariably clamps down or undermines the very Constitution that the President has vowed to protect.
We are very cognizant of the fact that he has the freedoms and he's to enjoy freedoms of that nature. What is different about the statement now is it has some level of inciting anarchy, inciting an uprising. This one, even myself as an executive director for my institution, and any other person for that matter, would not be able to do without attracting, of course, the relevant authorities that would query. Because at the end of the day, our statements, our words carry weight. And so when he is exercising his right to speak about matters, we have a problem with him inciting.
The former president is saying that current president Hakainde Hichilema has not been able to keep his promises of improved living conditions, and Zambians are feeling the pinch. And that is why he thinks that Zambians will arise and demand that if the president, the current president, cannot solve the current challenges of the economy, he should hand over power and go back to his business, as he said. His supporters are saying, what is wrong talking about this?
Yes, things are difficult, with, of course, the high cost of living being number one on that list. And yes, Zambians are complaining. But one thing I'll tell you is that the solution is not going to come from the people, the very people that put Zambia in the space that we are in right now. There is no way you can look for a solution from the person that orchestrated and originated the problem in the first place. And in this case, the former ruling party and its leadership put us where we are today by overborrowing, misapplication of funds, mismanagement of funds. And here we are today. We have had to suffer the consequences that were brought about by that regime. Mr. Hakainde Hichilema, His Excellency the President of Zambia today, has found himself in a very difficult space because now he is the one that is doing the cleaning up. He is the one that has to solve a problem that was created by somebody else. And it does not help matters the fact that the very people that created this problem that we are currently facing are the very people that are pointing the fingers at him.
Your critics are saying you came out swinging at the former president because being a civil society leader or leading a civil society organization that is closely aligned to the government, and that is why you are pretty much being harsh or pushing back against the statement the former president made, which they said was legitimate in the first place. Briefly, your reaction.
As a leader of a civil society organization, my loyalty lies with the people. That is number one. And my loyalty lying with the people means that a government that has been legitimately, democratically, constitutionally, democratically elected by the people, for the people, of the people, I will support. It does not matter which political party forms government. Is there, as civil society leader, I will work very well with them to ensure that if they have problems, problems are resolved for the full benefit of the Zambian people, period.
Caroline Katotobwe is the executive director of the Center for Policy Dialogue. She spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. In Botswana, opposition parties are planning to engage the international community about what they say is their lack of trust in the ability of the Independent Electoral Commission to organize the coming general elections. It comes after the groups, including the Alliance for Progressives, or AP, jointly expressed discontent with the ongoing voter registration process. They contend that it lacks transparency and credibility due to the electoral body's refusal to allow the group to monitor the process. A recent court ruling prevented opposition groups from monitoring voter registration. It comes as the Electoral Commission compiles a list to be used for the October polls. The electoral body dismissed the criticism, saying it is prepared to organize transparent elections. For more on plans to engage the international community and concerns about the coming vote, I read Penu Butali. He is the General Secretary of the Opposition Alliance for Progressives, or AP.
As stakeholders in the electoral process of Botswana, we have completely lost confidence on the election management body, the Electoral Independent Electoral Commission. What's happened is that following the contested 2019 elections, we did our own evaluation and investigations. And one of the gaps that we found was that during registration of voters or voter registration, we as the opposition and observer groups, we are not there, and therefore we are not privy to what happens. So when the or before the registration started for the 2024 elections, we indicated or wrote to the IEC to say we would love to shine in more light on the process, bring more transparency on the process, by having observers just to see that everything that happens during registration is according to the book. Then, to our surprise, they ignored that request.
Why are you engaging the international community? What is the objective here?
Well, the objective here is to, one, raise awareness of what is going on in Botswana in terms of the democracy, in terms of the upcoming elections, you know, to ensure that those that are defenders of democracy will be able to engage at their different levels to say, well, what can we do to ensure that the elections in Botswana are indeed free and fair? I know that half the time when we make such cries for help, you know, as the opposition, we are always accused of bad mouthing or saying bad things about the country and the name of the country. But we are true patriots because we are simply saying, in an electoral process, you operate at the level of confidence and trust. If the public, if stakeholders lose trust on the process, on the electoral process, even on the electoral management body, then it's a recipe for disaster.
The Independent Electoral Commission is on record to say that it has a track record of organizing credible elections in spite of these criticisms you are leveling against it, and that individual or people of Botswana are free to monitor the voter registration process as part of the transparency process, and that the opposition is making the IEC unpopular ahead of the election just to demonize the way they are going about organizing the coming elections.
The question then is, if they have nothing to hide, why are they so opposed to the opposition observing registration process? Is that not what is done in mature democracies, where anybody who wants to make sure that they are convinced that nothing that is wrong happens during registration can go and observe? The first question is, why are they opposed to that? The second thing is that, you know, observer missions, reports, not one, not two, many reports of different observer missions have, you know, suggested that the counting after voting, the counting must be done in polling stations. Now, even after many of these reports, even after the IEC itself in its reports or stakeholder reports, they have captured this, they still refuse. They still want to take the ballot boxes, run away with them many kilometers with nobody keeping an eye on them, nobody even making sure that they're not tampered with. The question is, if you have nothing to hide, why don't you count at the polling stations? The third thing is that, you know, we have been saying in the past we used to use indelible ink to make sure that people don't vote more than once. This indelible ink was stopped. The question is, why was it stopped? Why shouldn't it be introduced to make sure that we deal with these concerns that we have?
Pinio Butali is the Secretary General of the Botswana Opposition Alliance for Progressives. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, in Uganda, the Opposition National Unity Platform, or NUP, is demanding the resignation of a leading member of the party over allegations of corruption and conflict of interest. Alex Waiswa, deputy spokesperson of the party, says allegations of corruption against Mathias Mpuuga, the party's parliamentary commissioner and a former leader of the opposition in parliament, is a distraction which he says led the party to demand his resignation. But Mpuuga rejected the demand. He was quoted in local media reporters saying there's a deliberate attempt to assassinate his reputation and character, adding that the allegations are trumped up. for clarification about the controversy, I reach Alex Waiswa. He is the deputy spokesperson for the NUP.
So our investigations as a party also pointed out that there were matters of concern that had been attributed to our leader of opposition. And when the party had a meeting of the highest conclave of leaders, he agreed to the challenges and the party advised him strongly to step down.
But he said there appears to be a cowardly attempt to force him to resign and that he will not resign, and that if such payment amounted to corruption, then all current and previous MPs should be compelled to refund to the public coffers monies paid as gratuity or honoraria. So why is he being singled out?
First of all, he fails to pinpoint out whether it was gratuity, whether it was honoria, whether it was whatever they decide to name it. For us, the principle is that with the conflict of interest, he personally participated in awarding himself the money. And by law, that is conflict of interest. It is abuse of office, and it is not acceptable by the core values of the National Unity Platform.
Now that he is refusing to step down or resign as demanded by the party, what's the next line of action?
Definitely, we will look at the law. We will understand and appreciate the law, and we will follow the law. We don't break the law.
What law do you mean? Because this was done in Parliament, and members of Parliament, according to Mr. Mpuga, was given by Parliament.
It was regularly given to him because he participated in the award.
But he's the leader of the opposition at the time in Parliament.
I want you to understand that the conflict was him originating an idea and benefiting from his decision. That is what they call by law conflict of interest. The all precedents that have been settled by courts of law internationally on matters of conflict of interest have pointed out on this, and this is not something that should be a point of discussion. This was abuse of office, and the right thing to do, the moral thing to do, is to step aside.
His supporters are saying this is not fair because their monies were allocated to him in his capacity as leader of the opposition, and that it appears that some people are targeting him from Chagulani's people who want to consolidate power and how the NUP is managed. And because he is not a family member of Robert Chagulani, his supporters are saying he is being targeted.
He's the deputy president. Unless he's saying that his duties as deputy president have not also been effectively done. He's the deputy president.
Are you saying that asking him to resign is not based on spite, envy, and deliberate misrepresentation against Mr. Mpuga?
Excuse me, my brother. The highest office the Honorable Mpuga has occupied in his political life has been given to him by the National Unity Platform. That is uncontested. It is the National Unity Platform that gave him a platform as deputy president. He was never elected. He was appointed by the wisdom of the people of Uganda. It is the National Unity Platform that gave him the opportunity to serve Ugandans as the leader of opposition. It is the National Unity Platform that gave him the opportunity to serve Ugandans as the deputy president of the National Unity Platform. Therefore, it is pedestrian for anybody to allege that a person who has been occupying the highest offices of the organization, notwithstanding when he joined the organization, today is standing around say, excuse me, it's not the family that asked him taxpayers' money to a tune of 500 million shillings. No. And we are discussing the moral fabric because service above self inclines itself to the moral fabric.
But Mr. Mpuga is quoted in the local media saying it is an inside deliberate and funded campaign to character assassinate him, vowing that to sacrifice himself to restore sanity and common sense in the National Unity Platform. So he is putting the party literally above himself.
We will gladly await the fruits of his sacrifice.
Alex Waiswa is the deputy spokesperson for the NUP. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. As negotiators push to secure a temporary ceasefire deal that will halt the Gaza war before Ramadan begins, a message from Michigan residents signaling anger at President Joe Biden's support of Israel's campaign that has killed almost 30,000 Palestinians. Early results show that 13% of Democratic primary voters in the critical swing state, home to a large Arab American constituency, marked their primary ballot as uncommitted on the president. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wide Kuswara has this account, with reporting from Michigan by Dora Makua.
Israeli airstrikes continue in Rafah, Gaza's southernmost city, where more than a million Palestinians seek safety, as negotiators aim for a temporary ceasefire ahead of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan.
My hope is by next Monday we'll have a ceasefire.
A breakthrough is key for President Joe Biden as he faces angry Democrats horrified by the Gaza death toll. He won Tuesday's Democratic primary election in Michigan, home to a large Arab American constituency, but faced opposition from the Listen to Michigan campaign. It mobilized people to vote uncommitted to pressure Biden to back a permanent ceasefire. One of them is Palestinian-American Adam Abu Salah, who worked on Biden's 2020 campaign.
We thought he would be somebody that would lead this country with humanity and compassion, but instead he's been leading with hypocrisy.
Nationally, Arab and Muslim Americans are not a significant voting bloc. But the size of the uncommitted vote in Michigan will signal how strongly Americans reject Biden's Gaza policies, as they represent other groups in the president's coalition. Minority voters, young and progressive Democrats, including anti-war Jewish voters. Noura Siddiqui, assistant professor in the Muslim Studies program at Michigan State University's Political Science Department, via Skype.
Higher up Democrats assume that Democrats are going to show up to vote and are going to show up to vote for Biden because the other option is so horrific and fear-inducing. But that also frustrates voters because they feel like they've shown up year after year and that their perspective isn't being heard.
Some American Muslims say even the alternative can't be worse than Biden. Progressive Democrat Samra Lukman is part of the Abandon Biden campaign.
To have somebody like me today sit before you and say, I'm willing to accept a Trump presidency on the opposite side of the spectrum in order to oust Biden from office, it's really a testament to how bad this president has failed.
Another testament, U.S. Air Force Senior Airman Aaron Bushnell set himself on fire in front of the Israeli embassy in protest Sunday. The White House called his death a horrible tragedy. Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said they understand the frustration from supporters of the Palestinian cause.
We understand what this means to this community, and the president understands that too. So we care very much about that and what the community again is going through.
But Biden's critics say he's not listening, despite various polls showing that a growing number of Americans support a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. James Zogby, president of the Arab American Institute, via Zoom.
They're listening to donors and they're listening to pressure groups. So where is the power center in the party? It's with the establishment. Where is the majority of the vote in the party? It's with the progressive wing. It's with those who feel that justice and peace are not being well served by the current policy.
Without a drastic change in Biden's support for Israel, Zogby said it will be difficult to persuade Arab American voters, a key constituent in Michigan in the November election. It doesn't take too many votes to lose the critical swing state. In 2016, former President Donald Trump won it by less than 11,000 votes. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
And right now it's time for music from African Collection.
Tiny. anacheka kama mazuri, anajua kabisa amemteka kwa kesi na shughuli, eti kumwacha na zaja sakosepa na toa wapi jeuri, na kwenye koma kaeka nota kanitia na kufuli. Oh baby, mimi hapa tabani
mwenyewe, nisike unisafirishe. Wewe utaniona, funa volar ina badansa ne pesa batu yelengi na mutema eh chote ni like sa bawa
That was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. From the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Douglas Impuga and engineer Peter Handley, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a bad son gives a bad name to his mother. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.